Blog Talk Radio.
Indiana Adoptee Network news host Pam Krosky has been an advocate for the adoption community for over 25 years, serving as president of both HEAR, Hoosiers for Equal Access to Records, and IAN, Indiana Adoption Network, a nonprofit organization committed to enhancing the lives of those who have been touched by adoption, focusing on education and empowerment. And now your host, Pam Krosky.
Hey guys, it's almost the end of November, and if you are listening to this, obviously you know November is National Adoption Awareness Month, and we've all been inundated with tons of information thrown at us. If you're on Twitter, you see it. If you're on Facebook, you see it. It's kind of hard to avoid this day and age of social media. It's out there everywhere. I just think we need to focus. You know, we need to keep ourselves educated. We need to remember it's about us. You know, I try to, let us all know that during each show that, remember that we're the experts, that we know, the best. We know best for ourselves. All of us are different. So we just need to concentrate on that. Again, it's really overwhelming. So let's try to close out this month and try to pick up what we've, learned during this month. Hopefully you've gotten a chance to listen to some podcasts, not only mine, but there are a few others out there that are really good and really healing. One is a friend sort of on Twitter. It's Adoptees On. That's a great podcast you can listen to. So hopefully you get something from each of these shows, and that gives you some direction and definitely a positive, thought process. And so today, without further ado, my guest, she and I have actually, talked for many years. This is our first time to do a show, so I'm pretty thrilled. And she's got a lot to share with us. So I want to introduce Jesenia Arias, and we can talk a little bit about what she does. She is the founder of the I Am Adopted movement. She's a creator and host of I Am Adopted TV. She's a Christian, inspiring adoptees to live their best life, and wants you all to know that you have a purpose. So welcome.
Hi, thank you so much. Excuse my voice, it's a bit hoarse today.
Well, I'm just glad that you're able to talk. I would hate for that to hamper that. A little stretchy little voice. It's easy to get that, especially late at night. But I thought maybe you could tell everybody about, what kind of, what made you, I guess, decide to, I know you've done writings. I know you've, written to all kinds of places. I know you don't necessarily write for, some places anymore, but what kind of made you want to step out and start that process to share your story?
Well, I originally started sharing my story probably about 10 years ago. Basically, it was just like an online journal, like a typical blogger.com site, talking about my adoption. It was my own personal space because at that time, I didn't know anyone that was adopted. I wasn't connected with anyone in adoption land. So it's just my way to be able to put my thoughts out instead of having to deal with them in my mind, because we all know how detrimental it could be to just keep all your thoughts in your brain without working them out or getting them out into the world, or, actually being able to visualize what you're going through. So that's where it started. And then what I noticed started happening was that other adoptees started finding my blog and telling me, hey, I'm adopted too. I struggle with some of the same things. I struggle with loss, with adoption trauma, with identity, anxiety, a host of different things that we were able to relate with each other. And then as a little bit of time went on, I guess as Google starts picking up your website and some blog articles, I started connecting with adoptive parents who at that point were like, oh, so now I can understand why my adopted child acts this way or is having issues in this area. And they started thanking me for being that person, that voice, where they were able to connect why their child was struggling with some of the issues that I just mentioned, like identity, loss, and behavioral issues. And then with birth parents, then when they also started finding my site, specifically birth mothers, they, sadly, the majority of them were like so upset with themselves for placing their child for adoption because they obviously wanted the best for their child when they did, when they made that decision, but they had no idea that the outcome could be as hard as it is, where there is adoption trauma or loss. So I was kind of like, to a few of them have actually called me like their child, you know, because I was the only inkling that they had to understand or to be able to relate what their child may be going through. And then from there, you know, a couple years, well, several years later, I launched I Am Adopted, and it started with a Facebook page that's growing a lot this past year. Where, you know, because adoptive parents, the issue is that adoptive parents, when they go to these agencies or prospective adoptive parents, they're not told what can happen possibly post-adoption. You know, all the agencies really care for is to adopt the baby out. You know, obviously they collect the money for the adoption. It's a business, if we were to just be 100% honest about it, you know. So they could honestly care less what happens post-adoption. And that's why there's so few resources available for adoptees, because primarily adoption is about, A, the birth mother, and B, the adopted parent, leaving the adoptee out. So that's just what pretty much launched what I'm doing, and I'm just so thankful that God has allowed me to use my voice and my story to help everybody in the triad, because we all need each other, you know. As many times as we kind of segregate ourselves into our own little groups, in order to improve adoption, we all need each other. You know, we can't always just stay in our own little groups to change the future of it.
Right, right. I feel like, you know, I think, it, I don't know for you, but for me, reunion happened. And, you know, I was busy trying to make these connections. And I couldn't really figure out why, you know, things weren't really connecting. And I mean, they were, but they just weren't on the level that I really wanted, I guess. And, you know, not like you, until I started talking to other adoptees, I went, okay. Like, there were things that I went, I get that now, you know, and, you know, that we have no one that looks like us or sounds like us, or, you know, and we're just expected to take this identity, you know, from our adoptive parents. And, you know, you kind of just absorb that and you forget, oh, okay, maybe I'm allowed to have these feelings. And it's, you know, it's really hard to tell yourself that it's okay to, you know, feel that. And that's what I hate for the little peeps, you know, that are out there, that, you know, there's adoptive parents that don't know this. I mean, you know, it is maybe getting a little better, but there's still a chunk of them out there that aren't getting to share, you know, and parents, I do think, hinder that. They don't mm-hmm. want to think there's a problem, because then how do they fix it?
Absolutely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. In my own personal life, I'm very transparent about both sides of my family, my birth family and my adoptive family. And one thing that I spent a great deal of time struggling with was being able to figure out how to have these two families in my life, because I think our overall goal, most of us, is to want to just have one family. That's like our desire. But somehow we just put one on one side and one on the other, which causes us more problems than anything emotionally, because it's like we want to please one side or we don't want to hurt the other side, and vice versa. And it puts us adoptees, I always say, it's like we're like the monkey in the middle and trying to please everyone and be careful with what we say here. And I'm always speaking about being expressive in your thoughts, whether it's verbally, through blogging or creative arts, anything like that, because you have to have an outlet to get everything out, because truthfully, it's so difficult when you are so conscious of, you know, not wanting to hurt one of the other family, that you will never truly have that healing unless you're able to release those thoughts. And being an adoptee and being concerned of both sides of the family, you'll never have that release if you're not able to communicate or to talk about it. And adoptive parents, like you said, it's adoption is something that's celebrated, you know, by society and obviously by adoptive parents and things like that. But it's also they forget about the loss, or we don't talk about the loss as a whole, which is something that, you know, I'm hoping to see in the next 5 years, that it's something where we have like PSAs about adoption trauma and adoption loss, because adoptive parents, they don't think about what adoptees could be suffering from. Like we spoke about earlier about adoption trauma, suicide, the incarceration rate, alcohol
right.
abuse, drug abuse, all these things that are affected because of adoption and adoption loss. So it just puts adoptees in a difficult place, and, you know, adoptive parents need to be a little bit more aware, you know, what their adoptee could be facing. So it's so important to open those lines of communication, and that's why I'm so thankful that there are so many adoptees, especially now, that are using their voices, using their platforms, and speaking their truth, because it's time for us to be heard, because when people hear our stories, it's then that we begin to save lives.
Right, right. I just think that, you know, we're afraid. I mean, I think that there are so many of us that think, you know, like you said, the monkey in the middle. I mean, we are literally trying to be the referee, the, you know, make sure everybody gets along, make sure, you know, everything goes right. And sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it just needs to exist. And sometimes it just is what it is. I mean, you know, we can't, you know, control anything any more than we think we can. But I think that that's another thing that runs in us as adoptees. We try to have control over the situation. And I know myself, when I don't, when I feel like there's something out of my complete control, I'm almost bonkers. Like, I just feel like, oh, no. Because I think we've had no control. And, you know, not putting blame anywhere, but just saying, you know, listen, we are in the middle of this. And, you know, there are so many things wrong with this and what's done. And, you know, I understand that, you know, maybe during the time of, you know, adoptions of the, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, they didn't inform parents. They didn't educate them. Okay, great. But now we know. Now we know. So let's make the difference. Let's not just keep making these same mistakes.
Absolutely.
I just think it's too much. Yeah. I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about your story at all. Like, you know, I don't know if, you know, you want to talk about your reunion and how things went for you and, you know, kind of how everything kind of fell into place for you.
Sure. I haven't really spoken about it, so this would be the first, especially like on a public platform. Only those that are like close to me know exactly what happened. Some people know some tidbits, but it has been extremely traumatic for me.
Right.
And this is why I hold adoption, like mental health, so dear to me. I'm so passionate about it, because you never know when you're searching, you never know what you're going to find. You never know
right.
what's going to happen. And that's why I say it's so important. I was just speaking with an adoptee yesterday who is dealing with a birth mother who does not want contact. And
right.
she actually located her. And I told her my best advice before anything is to find a therapist that is specific to helping adoptees that specializes in that area, because you need someone to prepare you for it. You need someone to help you through it and after it.
right.
And that's all.
I
those
agree.
Are all things I didn't have. I didn't have when I started all of this. I wasn't really connected to anyone. You were actually like the first person that, as I told you before, like I actually connected with and spent a couple of, you know, some time talking to. So when my family found me, actually, that's what made it kind of like the tables turned on me, because it's different, believe it or not, when you're searching for your family and you find them versus them finding you. Because
right.
when you're finding them or searching for them, it's like the ball is in your court and you have the power. But then when they find you, you know, it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
like,
yeah.
You know, it catches you off guard and you don't know what to do. So my initial website, my blog I had, the header said, searching for who I thought was my adoptive mom's name. She changed her name, so that's why I struggled with even finding her. But I had at that time, I had like a few popular adoption blog articles. So it's like anytime you searched anything about adoption, it came up. So once they found me by doing like a Google search on adoption, I look just like my adoptive mom. My birth mom. That's the crazy thing, because I'm one of seven children and I look identical to her. Once they found that, and I had YouTube videos, our voices are the same, we look the same, they were like, that's her. So they just started messaging me everywhere on every platform. You know, I was so overwhelmed. They're like, we believe you to be our sister or cousin or niece. And, you know, they're a huge family. When I say there were so many people coming at me, I was losing my mind. But yeah, it caught me off guard. Like, I couldn't speak to anybody for literally months. It was probably like 3 or 4 months. And I ended up only reaching out to one of them after like researching them, you know, where her background was. She had like a background in mental health. So I knew if anything, she should understand something. And I told her, you know, please call everybody up, like call the dogs off, not calling the dogs. But, you know, like I couldn't deal with everybody trying to contact me. And at that place, I was dealing with so much personally that I wasn't even ready to reunite with anyone or anything like that. And then it took me about a year. Oh, they started sending me a whole bunch of photos of my siblings. And I was just like, oh my gosh, because the crazy thing about it was that if you were to go back in my blogs, like way early when I first started, I used to have dreams about my birth family, like where they were and things like that. And it's exactly where they were. And that's what I was like. I don't know if it was God. I don't know if this was fate. Like, and I was actually, as I'm rebuilding my blog, saw those old posts, and I'm like, my gosh, like, it's crazy how I had these dreams about where they were in literally all different places, and this is exactly where they all were without any knowledge of where they were. So what made it so traumatic for me was that my family, let me back up a little bit. We speak so much about in the adoption community about wondering, was adoption really necessary, or was it for me, or did it really give me a better life, and defining what is a better life, you know? I never knew the circumstances, you know, it was all hearsay about what happened, you know, with my birth mom and things like that. But once they started contacting me, I spent a year of trying to figure things out before I even responded or even wanting to extend meeting any of them. And what happened was that a year later, that was in 2011. I think it was 2011 when they first contacted me. Early 2012, I saw that my brothers were a part of, it breaks my heart to say it, having to do with a really big drug sweep up. And they were just heavily invested in the drugs. Community drug dealing, and it was all over the news in America. It was in the news in Puerto Rico, and my heart sank, because all I could think of was that these people, this is my family, like, you know, my heart broke for them to think that this is how their life turned out, even though I was the only one that was adopted. And then, so when I saw that happened to them, it was two of them that was, they got picked up on this huge drug sweep, and then I had another brother that was basically on the run, and it's so hard.
It's a lot. It's a lot to process. I mean, we really think we're gonna find. Well, we hope we're gonna find. You know, these people that missed us. This, you know, they're famous. You know. That it's going to be this wonderful, you know, just easiness. And that is absolutely not what it is. It isn't.
No,
and people think that the search is hard. No, it's not. I mean, yes, it is, but it's just the beginning of it. That's just the start. And I hate that for you. I hate
that
for, it is. It is, because that's all we're left with. We don't have another choice. We only have fantasy.
Yeah.
No one's given us anything, you know, to go on. And sometimes for good reason, right? I mean, I do hate, though, always when people say, well, maybe it's better that you don't know. Maybe there's a good mm-hmm. reason that you haven't found. You know what? There is never a good enough reason that you could tell
Absolutely.
Me having known or found. Now, does that mean that we want to partake in the way maybe some of their lives have turned out? No. But it's about closure for us. And I think people mm-hmm. get that. I think outsiders get that confused. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's different for us. So.
Yeah, that's so true.
Oh, yeah. I mean.
So true.
I don't know. I mean, I don't want you to have to talk about, you know, I don't want you to have to go too deep and, you know, get too personal. I
oh,
mean,
no.
you can, you know.
No, it's okay. I wanted to touch on what you said, but just to kind of wrap it up, because it is too detailed for me right now, and maybe in the future I'll write a book with a tell-all of whatever, but it went on to when I met my birth family, like I said, one of the siblings that I said was picked up on this drug sweep. He ended up getting out, and then he was in a traumatic accident of some sort. I don't know how it happened. I think it was gang related of some sort, but he was in a coma, and I got a message saying, you know, I know you're not comfortable with meeting right now, but he may not live. So I, in my head, I was like, I don't want him to die. I don't want that to have, you know, to be a part of me, because I hear so often adoptees have to meet their birth families at the grave. And that's like a whole nother layer of trauma and loss. And so I went there, and that's when I met my birth mom. And so I never got the closure because I was so concerned with my brother. Glory to God, he made it. It was a miracle. He survived. And then 4 months later, my other brother that I've always known about was murdered. And that just took me to a whole nother place where this is when I stopped blogging. I stopped in touch with anybody in the adoption world, because that degree, you know, spending your entire life searching for someone and then, you know, finding them, you know, obviously I was never able to make it to his funeral for security purposes and to, you know, it's just, like I said, it's complicated. and things
right.
like that. But ultimately, I never got the closure that I needed, you know, and a lot of times we think we're going to get the closure that we need meeting our birth family. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how much they're willing to talk about, but in the end, as you just mentioned, like, you know, it's adoptive parents have this idea where they're like, oh, you know, it may be too much for my child right now or my teenager, or I'll never tell them what really happened to them, or I'll tell them when they get older or when they graduate from high school or graduate from college, because we don't want to interfere with their life. I wish I was told everything way earlier, because then I probably would have had more time, you know, to either impact their life, help change their life, or to even process everything. Like, it's never not okay to tell for adoptive parents to never tell their child their true story, what really happened, or to continue to wait, because
right,
a lot of times
right.
you know, families are dying, they're passed away, whether it's cancer, car accidents, illnesses, whatever it may be, you know, time is literally
right.
ticking, and I tell it to people all the time, like, it's always better to know than to not know, because you'll never know, and therefore you'll never have the chance to have any closure or to have the
right.
healing that you ultimately desire to have.
Right. Yeah, and how many people, I don't know about you, but I feel like I run into people all the time, you know, that it's too late. I mean, I literally just talked to an adoptee last night. We had a long conversation. Not knowing, you know, here in Indiana, there's a mutual consent registry that exists right now, and we all know those don't work. But her birth mom had registered in 1994. She just registered just a few months ago. And had I not put a post up that she just happened to see in another Indiana room, she was only partially registered. So when she did it fully, she finds out her mom died less than a year ago. And that's devastating for me, because I want to cry for them. And, you know, in my conversation,
yeah.
I try to really stay strong, but it hits you. I mean, it's a lot to take in. And, you know, I don't want our peeps to have to experience this. You know, even when rejection, there's some type of closure, but to find a grave, that's so hard. That's just, you know, there's no words for
it. No one deserves it. No one deserves that at all. And that's why it's so important for us to have open adoption records and to have these, to have both parties, birth mothers and adoptees, to register at these registries, and then to also make sure that they're updating their information. And then most importantly, for adoptive parents to put their feelings aside, put their thoughts or beliefs, whatever they heard, aside, and actually listen to what the majority of us adoptees are saying, and that's that we want to know who our birth families are. We want to have the address, the, whatever information you have, or and even your active support, you know.
Right.
In this.
Right.
Because it's
hard.
And
yeah, it is. And I feel like for so long we've just constantly been silenced, because there's another side we get to this that, you know, aren't we grateful? Aren't we grateful for what we have? Aren't we thankful for what we have? Aren't we glad that we were not aborted? Aren't we glad? I mean, I really just want to look at people sometimes and go, really? Like, that is really what's going through your mind, is we should be grateful that we were not aborted. I mean, of course. I mean, of course we are. I mean, and I can't even tell you how many people came to me and said, well, you'll still love your adoptive parents, right? And I got to the place where somewhere in the middle of this, the, like, sassiness came out, and I said, oh, no, actually, nope. Mm-mm. I can only love one person at a time, so nope, then we'll come.
Yeah.
And they'd look like, are you kidding? And I'd be like, seriously? And then they'd be like, oh, you're joking. And I'm like, yes, of course I'm joking. You know, people, we can have a million people in our lives that we can love, you know? And it cracks me up. I just think, you know, you almost have to laugh, because if you don't, you will cry or you will be very mad. And
oh,
sometimes
yeah.
we are.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's true. It's like we have like a million, especially those girls, like we have all these besties. We have so much love to give. Why do people think that we can't love our adoptive parents and our birth parents just the same? Like, I'm always perplexed by that. Like, or what about all the time and all the time that your adoptive parents spent, you know, raising you, and the money they spent to adopt you, and they chose you, and it's always about the adoptive parents, and that's why I get so confused. I'm like, hello, it's me. Like, I'm the one having to deal with this. Like, we lose complete thought, or society loses complete thought about the adoptee. It always comes back on, what about the adoptive parent? They did this sacrifice, and it's just really mind-blowing, but that just goes to show me how far we are right now to making things better.
Yeah. I love this. When they say, do you know what your parents have sacrificed? Or, you know, listen, you know, whatever our parents went through to adopt us, you know, I get that. You know, I don't know if maybe you saw this, maybe you didn't. At some point I put a post up. My adopted mom had brought paperwork over, and I didn't even know she left it here. And I found the case, and I started looking through it, and in it were documents from the agency. And in it, it actually said that I could be returned, but I guess I think that no monies would be returned. So, you know, I if I was found to be unsatisfactory, I could be returned.
Wow.
Wow, really? Like, you know, I mean, did they really need to put that in there? Is that, I mean, really, did they take the babies back? Did, you know, I can't imagine. And you already know that that's in our minds, and we always think we can go back. But then when you read that paperwork, and, I mean, I was literally shocked. It sounded like you were purchasing an animal. And I couldn't make sense of it. I mean, for the longest time, I just thought, you know, like, did you really read this stuff? Like, did you I think, though, they probably wanted a baby. They wanted a baby.
Yeah.
And if it said they had to go to Mars and back, they probably would have said, okay, you know, I mean, we'll do it. But, and no one can fault them for wanting, I guess, a baby. But at the same time, I can, because we cost money, you know. We're for sale. And I think that's so damaging in our heads. I mean, you know, we are a commodity, and I hate that it comes down to that, but it's the truth. And I don't even know how we even, I know how we begin to fix it. You know, we educate, but that's way easier said than done. But I love that we have plenty of sassy voices out there that literally, I don't care what side, where you're at, there's plenty of voices to listen to, and we'll get it out there eventually. I don't doubt that. So
definitely.
What do you feel like?
Yeah, one thing
go ahead, what?
Oh, one thing I wanted to point out, because I love that you said, I don't love the word, but we are commodities. We are all,
right.
Especially in other countries outside of America, because I do a lot of work in Asia, and children are viewed as commodities. I remember, I don't know exactly how true this is, but this is, I heard this from an adoptee that was in the military that is very active in adoptee rights. He was telling me that way back in the time of war in the Korean War, that they urine, for whatever reason, I can't remember, was used as a commodity. It was a resource that was sold for whatever reason. And then after that, they started seeing that there was value in children. And so that's why children have a price tag, because countries, especially that are suffering, their economy is suffering, they're like, hey, well, we've got these babies, you know, and they're valuable. People want babies. We could just, you know, pump money in our economy by raising the prices of adoption, you know, say adoption
right.
started at 10. Today, there are upwards $40,000, $50,000, depending on what, you know, if adoptive parents want to get picky, you know, they could jack the price up at any level. And my message to adoptive parents is, if you really want to, I don't know how likely this could happen, but in my dreams, you know, I really want to tell adoptive parents, hey, do you really want to help with this? You want to help not making adoption be a business and really be about children, you know, finding homes for children, then for a long period of time, it's like we need to ban, you know, adoptions or ban or boycott the cost of adoptions. Because what happens
right.
is if we stop giving these countries money, these governments and economies money, you know, then the price will go down, and it won't so much be about money. It'd be the focus on the children as humans as it should be, and not commodities as we just expressed it was.
Exactly.
But
yeah,
I don't see it happening because people want babies.
No.
So.
Yeah, I know. The other side of this is too, which, you know, somebody had said, you know, they were describing, you know, my podcast. It's, you know, definitely like adoptee rights and things like that. Well, you know, this show is definitely more than that. But I guess I do always want to go back to adoptee rights. And in the middle of this here in Indiana, you know, one of our biggest people to take on was an adoption attorney. And not only did he put a stop to it, he cost us so much time and money. And his sister is a confidential intermediary. So he was making money on adoptions and then turning around making money on the adoptee. And even if he did their adoption, the adoptee had to go to the adoptive parents and get the okay before they would do the actual search. Okay, we
wow.
are adults. We
yeah.
do not need that. Yeah. And, you know, at one point he actually said, you know, I don't have a dog in this fight. And I was like, oh, buddy, but you do. You know, and, I mean, you just look at him and you go, seriously? I mean, I don't even know, you know, where you go with that. And
mm-hmm.
I think his adoptions are like $40,000. And he does a majority of closed adoptions still to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's insane that we, you know, that happens. I don't even
yeah,
know where. Yeah.
I don't know
where we
know
go
where
with that. I don't know
begin.
How we can get through to these people. I mean, I just, like you said, it has to be the pocket. The pockets, the purses,
the
wallets, whatever, that needs to be stopped, and that's what'll do it. That's where it all revolves, you know.
Absolutely. And adoption fundraising. If anybody's listening to this, if you know anything about me, I despise the thought of fundraising adoption because of the fact that two things. Number one, they know, these governments, they know, especially in other countries and even the United States, they know that you guys are willing to do anything to get the money to adopt this child.
Right.
Therefore, that's why this continues to go on. That's why adoption corruption keeps going on, and birth mothers are losing their children via coercion or, you know, because they need that baby. They need that money. And I want adoptive parents to know that agencies, the majority of them, I'm willing to bet about 90% of agencies, they're not for you and your child, your prospective child. They're about their money and their pockets. They could care less what happens to you afterwards. There are a few that care, but the majority of them absolutely do not care what happens. And that's why, you know, this is where I step in, because I have to fill in the gap, and that's what other adoptees as well that are working advocacy. We have to fill in the gap for where adoption agencies and adoptive attorneys, you know, either don't care or have dropped the ball, because there's no services to help adoptees or adoptive parents post-adoption that are good and effective.
Right. That post-adoption resource is essential. I mean, that's something that, you know, we hope, you know, Indiana Adoptee Network, you know, we're really focusing on that, and we're trying very hard to not just have passed a law here, that we really reach out to social workers, you know, the foster care, whatever, that we are reaching out to everybody in this, at least, you know, within our speaking distance that we can get to, that, you know, this needs to be, you know, changed, and we need to figure something out. And if we can't reach out and change with these people, you know, I don't know where we'll be, but, you know, that's what we need, to reach out to everybody. I mean, this isn't, you know, adoptive parents, you know, people who are the attorneys, the agencies. You know, I've seen a small shift here, which when we started legislation, a lot of these agencies had no idea. And it really proves that one person really can make a difference, because really this was not a huge team that made this difference here. It was a small team. And even agencies were affected by one person helping us. So, you know, if anyone who's listening, you know, and you know yourself, one person can make a difference. We can really talk about this and make, you know, huge strides.
Definitely. And that's why I'm so thankful for the Flip the Script movement, and the amount of adoptees that are showing up for National Adoption Month and every other month on the calendar, especially this year. Like, I just want to have a huge celebration party for the adoptees, because it takes so much out of us. Because all of us are in different places, whether it's in our healing or search and reunion process, where we are personally drained and, you know, emotionally trying to work out our own things, but we're still finding the time, because we know how important it is to speak about adoption advocacy and adoptee advocacy and things like that. And I've just seen so many people show up during this month that I'm just so proud of every single adoptee that was able to kind of put their emotions or thoughts aside to help the next generation of adoptees, or to help those that are going through it, whether it's to educate or to heal. I'm so proud.
I agree. And like you, I really do think, I mean, it has been full on. I think each year it just gets more and more. And I'm so thrilled at that, you know, we're not taking no for an answer, that we're saying, you know, listen, we have a voice. And, you know, I think this month I've done, I think, 4 podcasts. I usually do one a month. And, you know, this month, it's exhausting to do, but there's just, I didn't feel like I had a choice, that, you know, we need to use our voice, and we need to reach out, and we need to do this. And, you know, I don't know how far this show makes it. I don't even know who listens, really. And I hope that, you know, our peeps are listening to us, and, you know, we inspire them to, you know, share their story, you know, be able to talk about it. And I think the hardest part is just to say, you know, listen, it's okay to stand, you know, firm. Sometimes it's in that uncomfortable almost area, but it's okay, because it doesn't have to be uncomfortable for us. You know, if it's uncomfortable for other people, you know what? Okay, too bad, you know, too bad. because this is about us. And I don't know if you've ever seen during this month, you know, a lot of cities and a lot of the foster care, they'll do posters, you know, and they'll have the child.
Mm-hmm.
They'll have, you know, how old they are, what they like. And I walked into I was a speaking engagement I was doing in August, and they had these posters up. And I mean, it's honestly hard to even say the words. I stood there just, like, weeping. And, you know, I'm thinking, where are these parents? Where, like, why are these kids on these posters? And, you know, in these people's minds, they are doing their best to, you know, get these children out of foster care. But all I can do is just stand there and go, oh, like, it's too much. Like, I finally thought, okay, I've got to walk away, because it was just, you know, it was really just gut-wrenching to see that, you know, and to know these kids don't have homes.
Let me ask you this.
And, yeah.
What are your thoughts on... because I'm always back and forth with this, and I have extremely mixed feelings on this. But I was contacted before from a big foster care agency about the posters, you know, whether
right.
Because we see on social media, especially in our adopted community, how they don't want these children's posters to be promoted because, you know, these children don't have a voice. So why should
right.
they taking, you know, sharing their stories. But if we don't get the
right.
word out, how will these children find homes? So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I was experiencing because, you know, I mean, some of these children had severe medical disabilities. I mean, you know, they needed someone. And there's that thought process for me because, again, how are we supposed to feel? Like, you know, are we supposed to be glad that they're trying, or, you know, are we supposed to be insulted that they've got them on posters, you know, but we want them to have homes? I mean, this is where adoption is necessary, obviously, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I do see it as necessary because these children deserve a home, and I cannot stand that forever home stuff. That really, I think, okay.
Absolutely.
We all hope it's a forever home. I mean, you know, I don't know how it can be worded differently, and of course, it's really easy for me to pick apart because I'm not a little child in foster care. Although all of us were in foster care at some point before we're officially adopted,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of the status we have. So some of us stay in it longer than others, and I don't know. I really don't know where to stand on it. I want these children to have homes, though. I don't want them to be in, you know, foster care the rest of their lives. You know,
mm-hmm.
I want them to have, you know, connection and parents. And then, you know, there's the flip side, standing there, and it's like selling them, you know. I don't know where
yeah.
to really stand in it. I feel kind of on the fence, I guess, you know. It's never, I don't think there's an answer for everything. You know what I mean? There's just not one way to feel about it. It's tough, but I think they deserve homes. I mean, they deserve people
Absolutely.
To love them, and, you know, I think we all deserve that. So, you know, it's kind of, I don't know, again, some of us are sold at a cost, and then some of us are in foster care, and then, you know, there's no cost, but we suffer the same trauma all the way through. And I think that's the other thing, that no one really thinks that we have trauma since we were infants. They think, you know, if it happened and we have no real memory of it, then how could it be? I think that happens all
yeah.
the time. There's no validation to it. There's no validation to the trauma from the outside, you know, sources. They don't think it exists. Do you think, has anyone ever given you, like, a piece of advice that kind of stands out, or an adoptee that said one thing that, you know, you remember or that you kind of carry with you, or something you've even thought of yourself that kind of is your, a little bit of your anchor, you know?
Well, the way I have to, because I am someone who has endured an incredible amount of loss and trauma, And it was never maliciously done. You know, my adoptive mom never did anything. There's a lot of things she could have done better. I know she loves me, and I'm incredibly thankful for her adopting me, especially now that I know my story and my history. But for me, my anchor to carry on, number one, is Jesus Christ, and two is knowing that I have a purpose and a destiny. That's just something that I hold on to everyone, sharing with everyone, because no matter your beginnings, no matter what happened to you, I always try to choose joy. Am I hurting? Absolutely. Did it hurt what happened to me? Absolutely. But you know what? I can't change the past. You know, whether
right.
I'm in reunion or not, you know, it doesn't make a difference, because I get some adoptees that are like, well, at least you found your family. At least you had, yeah, I found my family, but I also found a lot of things that I wish to God I've never seen or had to experience. You know,
right.
But it's just choosing joy, choosing, you know, to help others. And that's why I'm just so involved in all sides of the triad, because this is my therapy too. You know, I will always be in some form of therapy for the rest of
sure.
my life. You know, I don't think this pain doesn't ever just go away. You just learn to work through it, you know, and to see it from a different light. And mine is, you know, giving back. And that's why in this next coming year, I want to work with adoptees to help them focus on creative outlets, on how they could tell their story, because there's so much power in sharing your story and being able to move forward.
Right. I agree. Because anger and resentment can overtake this. And it's okay to have a little bit of that, because sometimes I think that touch of it sort of drives us. But I think we also, you know, kind of have to heal some of that and...
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say move forward as in the way that we have to forget it, because we're never going to forget.
Yeah.
It's never going to, like you said, it's always going to be there. We're always going to be, you know, evolving out of, you know, some of that trauma. But I hope that we always are moving a step, you know, upwards, because listen, I mean, suicide for us is what are the statistics, like 4 times greater? I would
four
imagine
times,
it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that seems like a low number to me, because I feel like I've heard it a lot, and I feel like it happens a lot, because you know we're afraid to talk about it. But I do think if we can keep this dialogue open, it does help us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, telling your story does help.
Absolutely, and I just want to say,
yeah, it gives you that momentum to move forward. You know, I don't know if you've ever been to any conferences or you know, like, I don't know. You know, kind of, you know, what your journey has been. But for me, that's what I think sort of did it for me, because I was in around a mass amount of people. You know, I knew other people were like me, but I didn't know that these little things, you know, oh, maybe, you know, attention deficit, reactive attachment, you know, the trauma, whatever, you know, going to a friend's house and staying all night and being instantly wanting to go home. You know, not
mm-hmm.
wanting to stay. You know, if the bus was late, I cried. I mean, there were so many things that I thought, what is wrong? You know, there was why is this happening? Because you know, you don't see your friends doing it. And you're like, what
yeah.
is wrong with me? But it's the trauma we've suffered.
It's the trauma. Yeah. It's
mm-hmm.
the trauma.
I
wrote this long Facebook rant the other day on my Facebook page, facebook.com/ I am adopted, about suicide, because it was literally a month to that date on Thanksgiving that we lost another adoptee to suicide. And so it was on Thanksgiving Day on October 24th, and then I think it was 3 weeks before that we had another adoptee suicide. And I still sit here in awe of how we do not, well, not we, adoptive parents, adoptive agencies are not being more proactive about this. Why are we not talking about this? Why are we not believing this? Why am I arguing with you in my comments, or whether it's
right.
on my blogs or other places I write about adoption trauma? Why?
Right.
I'm, you know, my whole website is the basis of where adoptees are the experts on adoption. We live through this. So why aren't you telling me that, you know, my feelings are valid? I know what it feels like. Everything you just outlined, so many of us deal with the same thing. And
right.
so, you know, when I tell you this, the correct response from adoptive parents or adoption professionals should be like, I hear what you're saying. I'm listening. I understand. I'm sorry that you've been through that. How can I improve this? How could I help my child, you know, get to know, dig deeper, but not, don't tell me, oh, you're just complaining. You're being bitter. You're being angry. You're just ungrateful. Like, when I start hearing that, my heart breaks. It personally, it breaks, you know, and I still got to ask God for the strength. Help me, Lord, keep typing and working through this, you know, and I'm not the only one. There's so many of us, you know, in advocacy, you know, we're constantly getting beat down by adoptive parents, some adoptive parents and adoption professionals, and not even being heard when we're clearly telling you, hey, I'm at the ledge of this bridge that I'm going to jump off because, you know, X, Y, and Z, and they're still going to be like, you're bitter, just jump. Like, that's how it gets sometimes, because people say anything behind their computer.
Sure.
They're basically telling you in a nice way, just jump and kill yourself. That breaks my heart because I struggled with suicide for a very long time.
Right. Yeah, I don't think
we have to do
that. They don't understand. Yet, you know, if this were, you know, any other type of, you know, if it was a disease or if it was, you know, whatever, people would, you know, maybe they would view it differently, but they don't. And it's disheartening. And, again, we're the experts. And so, you know, again, if anybody's listening, you know, understand that you do have a voice and, you know, you get to use it. And hopefully you use it for, you know, for good. Because, you know, we can go out there and be vicious. We can be angry. It's not – people then shut down. So – unfortunately, you know, we have to be the voice of reason. And I hate sometimes that we're not allowed to, I mean, we can be however we'd like. But, you know, when you do any kind of, you know, legislative action or you do anything, you know, advocacy-wise, you can just watch faces of people when you talk about trauma. That it's like almost like they're robots and the button goes, whoop, and they just shut down. And you're like, wait a minute, you have just stopped listening to me. And I'm to tell you that's not, you don't have it right, that you're not listening and you're not reading and you're not, you know, let's change this, you know. I don't understand.
It's so true.
But yeah. Well, you know, I can't believe almost a whole hour has gone by. So we have just like zipped right through this.
Yeah, I feel like we can talk forever.
No. Well, and I think it's wonderful that you're out there and that, you know, I know it has been tough for you. It's, you know, it's not easy at all. And, you know, I really hope that, you know, anybody who's listening, you know, feels like they have a safe place to go. And I don't know if you want to tell people, you know, what's the best, you know, way to get a hold of you and they'd like to reach out to you and kind of what's coming up for you in the future.
Okay, well, I have a new website. Most of you guys know me from the Not So Secret Life of an Adoptee.com. That was my blog site. During this month, I wasn't as active as I normally am because I was working on the content and the different workshops and programs. So the new website is now iamadopted.net. My Facebook group, that is a very highly active group, is facebook.com/iamadopted. My Twitter handle is also I Am Adopted, and my Instagram is I Am Adopted. In the coming year, 2017, I'll be launching I Am Adopted TV, which will be a series of adoptees telling their stories and me doing like a Dear I Am Adopted, where adoptive parents, adoptees, birth mothers could write in questions, and I'll answer them online, because what happens is I'm inundated with so many questions every day that I can't respond to everybody, and some of them end up being the same question. So if I can just get them all out in one platform, it would help everybody greatly. Also, in the summer of 2017, I'll be back in the U.S., and I'll be hosting little coffee shop meetings, you know, to get to know other adoptive parents and birth parents and adoptees, because, like I said, we all need each other to make adoption land a better place for all of us to live in, and also doing some online workshops working with adoptive parents. I've got a great group of adoptive parents on my Facebook page that are really there to listen and to learn. And I just believe if they continue to, you know, invite other people, other, you know, people in their circles from adoptive parents into adoptee spaces, you know, it increases the likelihood that we can improve adoption or, and I'm sorry, adoption loss and trauma awareness as well. That's basically it. And I'm just so thankful for this year. I'm thankful to have the support that I have, that so many of us are working together and not working against each other, because all of us believe in something different because adoption is so unique and complex. But we don't have to necessarily believe in whether you're against adoption or for adoption. You know, don't let that drive you guys from not working together. You know, we've made great strides this summer, this month and this year, and I just want to see that continue to progress because we have to keep stay focused on the bigger picture, and that's that it's not just about us. I know it's easy to want it to just be about us when we're, you know, in our pain, but there's so much purpose in healing when we're able to help other people, whether it's our fellow adoptees or to make adoption land a better place.
Right, right. I totally agree. I mean, I think if we can, you know, reach out, we get everyone to reach out and, you know, we, you know, connect, that's what does it, you know. I mean, that's really
yeah.
us all together. You know, we can't do this without each other. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for giving us all that, you know, wonderful information. Maybe we can do another show. You know, we can talk about maybe some, get some main questions and really, you know, answer some things on another podcast. Now that we've got our time figured out and all that, we can do this again and really maybe, you know, answer some specific questions. People can go back and listen to it. Also, everybody, I know, you know, if you're listening, we've got our website up. Everything's running. We've got everything changed around. It's IndianaAdopteeNetwork.org. And we're also doing a conference in April of 2017, the 21st and 22nd in Bloomington, Indiana. And there's limited hotel rooms, so we're going to try and do another hotel so we'll have enough rooms for everybody. Lots of amazing keynote speakers, Leslie Payton McKinnon, Rhonda Churchill, Patty Hahn, Brian Stanton. That's just the tip of the iceberg, and we've got some great workshops, DNA, getting to know yourself a little better. So we hope you guys will join us, and if you want, again, go to IndianaAdopteeNetwork.org. You can follow us on Twitter, which is INADNet2018. You can follow us on there. And you can also email us, too. You can go to the website and click on any of us on the board, and you can email us if you've got any questions. You can become a member, come to the conference. We hope that you will reach out to us if you have, you know, any needs, especially if you're an Indiana adoptee. We can help you do some searching, but this is meant for adoptees all over, not just Indiana adoptees. So we hope you'll join us. And, again, I want to thank you for being on tonight, and I appreciate everything. And I know everybody out there will hopefully reach out to you, and if they've got any questions, they can send them to you. So thanks again for being on tonight. And, as always, everybody, blue skies and green lights until next time. Thanks.
Bye. Thank you so much.
Thanks.